When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
ESPN's The Far Post podcast. We are back for the final time of the dub regular season, and I just love that the regular season ended the way it started, with just pure chaos, absolute nonsense, the most ridiculous things you've ever seen in your life, and we absolutely loved to see it. Obviously, there were finals ramifications, there were ridiculous blowouts, there was bottle jobs, there was premier's plates awarded, so we have so much to talk about today and we can't wait to crack in. Before we do though, we want to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands we're recording on today, the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For today, you've got me, Marissa Ledanic, Anna Harrington, Sam Lewis, and Angela Christian Wilkes. So, friendos, let's begin today's, I feel like it's going to be a mega episode just because of the dub, but let's begin today with some you love to see it. Sam, do you want to kick us off? You're back on the pod. What did you love to see from this weekend?
She's back in pod form. Yes, lovely to be back. I know that we are going to be talking about goalkeepers during this episode, but I want to start on a very positive note with my You Love to See It, which is the performance of Newcastle Jets replacement goalkeeper Tiana Robertson. She was signed 5 days ago to replace Izzy Nino, who got that red card, and was absolutely epic in their 8-0 win over Adelaide United on the weekend, especially in the first half. There were some terrific acrobatic saves when Adelaide were just sort of starting to creep back in around halfway through the first half. And I really think that she kept them in it. And then Newcastle just absolutely ran away with the game. So Tiana Robertson, 21 years old, signed for the Jets 5 days ago after playing in the NPL. You love to see it.
Just incredible scenes, genuinely incredible scenes. Obviously, we will get to the rest of that Newcastle game later. Angela, what did you love to see from this weekend?
Well, okay, first of all, I just want to say I've got 3 Canberra United jerseys behind me. I obviously have to give a shout out to Michelle Heyman and her achievements over Canberra's last 2 games. But I don't want to sound like a broken record, and I do want to shout out another amazing, brace this weekend just gone. This from Emma Main for Wellington Phoenix. She scored 2 goals in their final game of the season against Western Sydney Wanderers. Very funny for a lot of reasons, because I think last pod we were talking a lot about, like, can victory do it? And we didn't really look at the implications for the Wanderers. But the Wellington Phoenix just absolutely came out in this game, and it was so much fun. And Emma Main's first goal is just very enjoyable. Mania Elliott does a cross in, and she just is like airborne, Emma Main, and she leaps through the air and kind of heads it in and then is planking. Wow, that's a 2011 reference. On the ground after the goal, just like joyously. A lot of fun. And then she scores another. Her second goal was also great. But yeah, the first one tickled me a lot. So the Knicks getting it done in their last game of the season and just having fun. And Emma Main, you know, scoring great goals. You love to see it.
And the celebration, Angela, for the second goal.
You can explain the celebration, Harrow,
because I think it tickles you. Choo-choo for a train, because her nickname is the Main Train. And she said she wanted to get it in. You love to see it. I guess I better carry on with some more you love to see it, hadn't I? After we will talk about this in depth. Don't you worry, listeners. After Sydney FC bottled winning the premiership plate, it was all in up to Melbourne City to go and win it. They had realistically, I think, had to win to do the thing, and they did. And I love the way that they did it so comprehensively. Rihanna Polisena, who I think has had an up and down season, maybe not hit the heights she would have necessarily liked. back into the starting lineup, clutch when they need it most. 8 minutes into this game, scores a banger to send City on their way. And then 15-year-old Shelby McMahon, who I think you're going to be hearing a lot of in the years to come, scores their first goal to seal the deal. So, yeah, I hate when trophy races sort of just peter out, and I thought that might happen, but this really did finish with a bang, and yeah, you'll have to see it. Secondly, a shout out to a friend of the pod, Alex Chidiak, who Sam was there at Leichhardt Oval, hopefully wasn't getting involved in all the slander getting sent Alex Chidiak's way, being our resident Sydney FC now. But from all reports, Alex Chidiak was copping it all game. Personally, I wouldn't be winding up maybe the most talented player on the field, but, you know, we're not all Sydney FC fans, are we? But anyway, she scored the fourth goal in that rout and did the old cup of the year celebration. And reports on Twitter also said that at one point, some bloke yelled out to her, and this is pretty grim stuff, "You failed in Mexico," to which friend of the pod Chids responded, "I failed everywhere." So Alex Chidiak, we don't agree with that. We like Alex Chidiak a lot. And she underlined her quality, as I said, by scoring that fourth goal. She's had a really strong end to the season. We know she's a gun finals performer. So for her to silence some critics and do the thing, you'll have to see it.
It was me. I was the man in the crowd.
We know that's a blatant lie. Because you simply wouldn't do that. I just, yeah, Chids, doing it for people who use self-deprecating humour everywhere. We absolutely love to see it. Really quickly from me, just M. Gilnick's strike in that victory Sydney game.
Great
so
goal.
Good. Loved Jamila Rankin's efforts with the assist, cutting it to the byline, cutting it back, and then Gilnick. I still don't, like, fully understand how she kind of manoeuvred her body in order to do this, but it was such a good goal. Unbelievable Tepes was the phrase I believe I used on Twitter. So absolutely loved to see it. But that goal is obviously a great way to talk about the first game we have to talk about. And there was so much to talk about in victory for Sydney 0. Do we just start right off the bat with the big talking point from this game?
Can I talk about a really funny talking point briefly that I did chuck in our group chat, which Tons was... when Sydney were 2-0 down, and poor Sydney FC admin tweets in the 59th minute that Tori Tumuth sends a header wide, and he goes, "A goal feels like it's on its way." And the next Sydney FC tweet 5 minutes later is, "The opposition add another." I lost it when I saw that. It's gone, "We're 2-0 down, but it just feels like a goal's coming our way." And it's like, not the type of goal you thought it would be.
Tweets that precede unfortunate events. Yeah.
Anyway, we got to talk about it, right? Like, it was the flashpoint of this game. I think it was the moment where victory were already, like, on top. But, Sam, you were there. I imagine if you were there, it would feel like that would be the moment that would just take the win completely out of yourselves if you're Sydney FC.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the first goal was a bit of a bummer, but it's at that point, Sydney were looking okay. They were creating some chances. They were starting to sort of get their foot on the ball a bit more. You know, Lana Murphy scores in the 17th minute through a little bit of chaos, but it wasn't the kind of goal that was, like, very obviously one team is better in this. Like, it was a little bit closer than what the ultimate scoreline suggests. But that penalty that was given away by Jada Wyman, I think, changed absolutely everything. Not just in terms of, like, all of a sudden they were 2-0 down and losing confidence in themselves, but it was just kind of one of those moments where, you know, a leader of the team, someone who's been in, you know, deciding games a lot in her career, lashes out at another player at a time when it seemed really unnecessary. Like, kicking out at a player is always unnecessary, but particularly then, you know, it was coming up to halftime. They were only 1-0 down. She got a little bump by Alex Chidiak after collecting the ball on the ground.
Just pretty normal stuff. Keepers cop that shit all the time.
Yeah,
right?
Like,
it's
stuff.
a bit of shit-assery. You come through, you make them uncomfortable when they got to distribute.
And yet,
right?
she swings her boot out at Alex Chidiak as she's jogging back. And it just seemed so uncharacteristic for Jada. It seemed really poorly timed. There didn't really seem to be enough kind of tension in what the game that had already happened to justify something like that. And it just totally, like, that was the thing that sucked all the oxygen out of Leichhardt Stadium, I've got to say, like that moment. And because there's no replay boards or big screens there, everyone was kind of watching the replays on their phones. And originally when it happened, like, a lot of people missed it and they were like, hang on a second, why is there a penalty? Why is a yellow card, blah, blah, blah. So some of us got the replay up on our phones and we're showing people around in the crowd. And when we saw the slow-mo replay, we were like, oh, yikes. Okay, that was not just a penalty, but it probably should have been a red card because it's clear malicious behaviour, you know. Yeah, so it was a real shame. And Sydney really just sort of lost the plot, I think, from there. It was a particularly bad performance from them. Like they really seemed to crumble under the pressure of this moment. Melbourne Victory were excellent in every single way. They just played better football. They played more simple football. They played in a way that they clearly understood what each other were doing. A number of their players were very good. Murphy was fantastic. Beattie Goad was excellent. Gilnick was great. Almost every single one of their players was great. And Sydney FC were just at panic stations for majority of the game. Their pass accuracy rating was like 60% or something, which is like really, really uncharacteristic for them. They just fell apart in front of 4,500 people at Leichhardt Stadium, which is kind of in the top five of standalone dub games in history. So, yeah, it was a real shame. They had the premiership literally there. I think the plate was at the stadium waiting to be given to them because all they needed to do was not lose with the confetti cannon, which also was hilariously wheeled away after the game. And they let it slip from their fingers. And Melbourne Victory, to their absolute credit, they needed to win this game in order to make finals, and they did. They absolutely whomped them. So,
back to the wall, reminded me actually a lot of Tillies v Canada in that sense, in Melbourne. Like, back to the wall, literally everything to lose and also everything to gain, right? And they just came out. Oh, just go back briefly to the Jada Wyman thing, because to me it's insane that it wasn't a red card. Some people, I think, get the confusion. They go, oh, but it's a penalty, it shouldn't be a red card. No, because that's only if it's a football challenge. Like, if you do a bad tackle and it's, you clip someone in the area, it's a penalty and not a red card because the old double jeopardy thing. But if it's a act like that, like serious foul play, it's not. It's astounding that she, for it to get picked up as a penalty in the first place, you go, well, why wasn't then it also a red card? And then, I'm not sure if there's that situation where someone, happy to have listeners clarify, where it's been ruled to be dealt with on the field that it doesn't get looked at. But for me, it's like if you have the match review and it's looked at and it's then not judged to be a serious error, like a clear and obvious error, I don't know how that's not the case, because like I think if everyone looks at that real time and in slow motion, not just in slow motion, you get, that's a red card. She has no, like, Sam, I don't need to rehash what you said. You labelled it perfectly. Unnecessary malicious act that, out of character as well, as you say, but it doesn't matter. Like, this should have been red card, suspension, and as we know, if it's serious foul play, you do get the book thrown at you. I don't think it's just a one-match suspension. It's usually at least two matches, if not potentially three. So, you know, it's potentially, could have been potentially season over, but at least it would have been a couple of matches. For me, it's pretty extraordinary that she's going to be available to play in that first final. You know, like Izzy Nino, justifiably sent off, two-match ban, missed the last round and is going to miss the first week of finals. Now Newcastle have made it. And for, Jada Wyman to be there in that first final is, I think that's a huge error. I think it's not a good look. I think it's a good opportunity to make a stand that, you know, I think she would regret it as well. She would say that's not in her character. I don't think we've ever seen her do something like that before. You see goalkeeping errors or you see, you know, moments in games, but never something like that. But I think it's one of those ones where it just had to be a red. And, for those that watch the men's game, it reminded me of the Valerja MacArthur v Western Sydney one where he kicked out and I think only got a yellow and should have been sent off. It's one that you look at it and you go, I don't know how it's not a clear and obvious error that can't be intervened with after the fact, just for the look of it all. Like, someone shouldn't be playing the week or the game after an offence like that. And it cost, you know, like they were fortunate that it didn't actually cost Melbourne victory in that game, you know, because they should have been playing against 10 for a big chunk of that game. Things played out the way they did, but whoever faces Sydney in that first final will be pretty entitled to be filthy if Jada Wyman goes out and has a blinder against them too. Anyway, I think that probably covers it off. But yeah, just a bigger and important to note, as we said with the Nino one, there's no VAR in the dub. And that, I think that also makes it more frustrating for me, because I think if there was VAR, that would have been ruled a clear and obvious error. The referee would have been called over to look at the screen and Jada Wyman would have been sent off. I think that's pretty clear. So for it to be reviewed after the fact and then go, even though I'm clear and obvious error, I just, it doesn't stack up for me. Anyway.
Does anyone, like when they do a review, what are they looking at? Because surely, sorry if that's a really stupid question, but are they just looking at the same broadcast footage that would be available? Yeah. Interesting. Anyway, that was just a silly question from me. But, yeah, red card. I mean, the memeability of it is quite good, but, you know, that's not worth making the wrong decision in this kind of situation. And I'm sure that wasn't Casey Rybelt's intention when she did it, to be like, people are going to love this. Anyway, those are my thoughts. I agree, red card. And, yeah, I think you would be potentially quite... I mean, Sydney are lucky that they'd already kind of secured a spot in the finals. But on the other side of that, I think, yeah, if you're in Newcastle looking at this, you're kind of like probably having some question marks over the decision, because, you know, you're going into finals fairly compromised because of the actions of one of your players. But, yeah, I don't know. But
hearing it more like and more, you said, Sydney conspiracy, says Angela.
Sorry, I hadn't actually finished my tinfoil hat. I was in a bit of a rush this morning, but
did you get
I'll
the
make
green...
sure I have it for next episode.
Did you get the green texture out to go with the Canberra jerseys?
Yes.
Yeah.
The green permanent marker. And like you said, sorry, just going back a little bit, Sam, but yeah, it didn't define the game for Sydney, and on that account, I think they're quite lucky, but I'm curious to know what you're thinking, like moving forward into finals, like how they would come back from this, because just from my non-Sydney enough understanding, they do seem to be playing like they've had to shuffle people around. They're obviously having to adjust with some massive like outs in defense especially, but like, was it a blip on the radar, or is this a clientele thing?
I think it's both. The clientele thing absolutely has affected Sydney season. The fact that they finished in the top two at all, considering the players that they've lost, not just through injury but also in the off season, is pretty amazing. They've still managed to get there with the youngest team on average as well. Like, I think their average age across the entire squad at the point of finals is like 22, which tracks with Sydney FC. You know, they're all into youth development and whatever, but their hand has really been forced this season with the loss of some of these players. I think the big loss for them has actually been Kirstie Fenton over the last couple of games. Agreed. I think she's been really, really huge for them all season, and they just haven't found a like-for-like replacement. They had Margot Chauvert in there for a bit, who is okay, but she just doesn't have the engine. She doesn't have the creativity. You know, she Fenton was very similar to Jamila Rankin in being able to you know, bomb all the way up to the other end of the field and create goal scoring opportunities, and Sydney just haven't been able to find a replacement for that. You know, we had Abby Lemon in there maybe once or twice, but that really hasn't come off either. And yeah, look, I think it's again, to Melbourne Victory's credit in this game, they absolutely knew who Sydney FC's best players and most creative players were, namely Taylor Ray and Mackenzie Hawksby, and would not give them a sniff, would not allow them to move, would not allow them to pass a ball to anybody. And Sydney really struggled. They didn't really seem to have a plan B outside of that. And so it was basically just, well, if our midfield is being blocked, let's just bomb the ball over midfield and hope that one of our fast players gets it. And unfortunately, they've only got one fast player, which is Courtney Vine, because Princess Sabini is as slow as a glacier. So yeah, it's just a... it's a really frustrating thing, I think, now coming into finals, because these past two games, these two losses against Canberra and now victory, I think, have really exposed them. And these two teams have been able to find the weaknesses in Sydney FC that maybe other teams hadn't, or maybe up until this point Sydney have been able to paper over. So yeah, I'm a bit nervous actually going into finals now, because like they're not really coming off a good run, and you know, yes, they've got an extra week off by virtue of finishing second, but whoever they play, whether it's going to be Victory or Central Coast Mariners, you know, both of those teams are very good, and they have multiple ways of getting at goal, and I think they're both very well coached teams as well. So yeah, I'm going to be really curious to see how they go.
I'm intrigued with Sydney as to how they go. It shouldn't be like this because they're still a top two team, but I think they'll probably try and go with a bit of backs to the wall. I don't think they can go underdog, right, because they finished in the top two. But I feel like normally, Sam, Sydney have had this aura about them over the past few years. The only team that's sort of been able to dispel that aura in finals has obviously been Melbourne Victory. Otherwise, they've been just awesome.
Yeah.
But I'll be interested to see how they go. Like, going into finals, it's great that they've got the week off, I think, to sort of reset, and that it's not an elimination first up. But I'm going to be fascinated to see how they handle that, because all of a sudden they're very much in like the hunted, getting hunted down sort of vibe. Like, teams have got a sniff. It's, you know, like the old Lee Matthews, if it bleeds, you can kill it, right? So I think teams are looking at Sydney FC, right? Yeah, Angela, Google it. 2001, Brisbane Lions against Essendon.
Angela just had the most shocked look on her face when Harrow said that line.
Footy.
You're right. I think you're right, like, Harrow. Like,
if you're that team, right? You're looking at, if you're any of the top four teams or finals teams, you're looking at Sydney FC, right, Sam, and you're going, they're vulnerable. We can get them. As you say, they've lost Kirsty Fenton. We can't really talk about Nat Tobin because they haven't had her available all season, right? Like, as good a player as she is, and influential a player and leader as she is, they haven't had her. But Kirsty Fenton, I think that one's real, in particular. And the way some of the shuffling they've had to do as well. Angela's just caught up. Gathered it?
Yep. Brisbane Lions core.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. But yeah, sorry, Sam. It does feel like that with Sydney FC, and whether I think it's going to, the key to them is going to be how they respond to that, because everyone's got a sniff at the moment, I think.
Yeah, 100%. So I think the only thing that Sydney have really got going for them at the moment is that they have to prove a point now. Like, they've come off two losses to end their season. They've just lost the Premier's plate when they were in pole position. Now is the time to be like, all right, let's put our hard hats on and let's just barrel through this final series and see if we can come out the other side with a trophy, which would be even more miraculous considering everything that they've copped over the course of the season. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a ripper. Like, it's going to be a great final series regardless of who gets where. But we'll talk about that a little bit later, I suppose.
And you mentioned Victory. I thought that was so impressive. Like,
so good.
I said a week ago, I was like, oh, I reckon the most likely thing is it's going to be all done before Victory even play Sydney. And it was the exact opposite. Like, they had to do it all to get through. Like, they've not necessarily, I know they had that sort of, I think it was a nil all draw against Sydney earlier in the season. But it's not easy going up to Sydney and winning. And I feel like Victory, they were in real danger, I thought, of crashing out and copying that flat track bully tag. But I thought that response was incredible. I love that they brought in Alana Murphy. I love the changes they made to freshen things up. I thought that was a really good call. Murphy, I think, was, they listed her as their player of the match. Jamella Rankin, I think Beattie Goad's just been sensational since she came back from her sort of study break. And it just seemed to click. Like, the desperation was there. You mentioned, Sam, the Murphy goal at the start was scrappy. They're the sorts of goals that you need to win if you're going to, you know, try and win titles. The Gielnick one's lovely and, you know, like a really nice build-up, but it's the sort of jammy goals that you need to put away. I mentioned to Rachel Lowe, who I think that would have been a really big and important game for her, like sort of, you know, justifying the move down. I think it's been entirely the right move for her. I think she needed to seek new pastures and victories well. And she's sort of, the interesting thing, I think, with the 22-game season is she's sort of ridden the highs and lows throughout this season at Victory. She's got used as a forward a bit. She's played in midfield. She's scored bucket loads of goals. They've had to figure out what's going on with their midfield as well. I thought it was the perfect response. I'm not convinced yet because of the way they threw it away against Newcastle. It feels like they have maybe the highest ceiling of all these teams, but it's just the difference between their ceiling and their floor just seems like, and I imagine that would frustrate them beyond end, seems quite large. And it's, can they close that when finals come around? I think they'll love it. Like, having their backs to the wall and having to go and do the thing that suit them. When they've won their previous championships, they've also had to do that. But I thought that was like so impressive, like such a good response. And the variety of goal scorers as well. I think you mentioned a few players, but Kayla Morrison has had a super second half of the season. You know, she's an Australian citizen now. Will she try and put her hand up again to get into that Matilda's mix? Because I thought, maybe scratchy first half of the season, but she's really come home with a bang. And the thing I love about her game is how dangerous she is at set pieces. Even if she doesn't score the headers, it's her headers so often that create that chaos or provide an opportunity for another player. And we know her leadership and that sort of thing. I think, yeah, she's been fantastic. But, yeah, I don't know if they're peaking at the right time because they're so up and down. And maybe there was just that element of chance that, as you say, Sam, Newcastle have hit their straps so well as well that... and there was the Melina Ahearns factor last week. But, yeah, if they can perform like they did on the weekend, you really like them in terms of silverware contention. But for me, you need to see it week in, week out, and that's maybe been their struggle.
My theory with the Kayla Morrison-headed chaos theme is that it's partly to do with her Sailor Moon hairdo with the two buns, where the ball probably just like pings off one of them in just a random direction, and that's how the chaos environment is created.
Just like a pinball machine of some sort, like her pulling the toggles and things are moving around. Harrow mentioned Newcastle, and obviously we need to talk about Newcastle because at the beginning of this round it was like, we spoke about it at length last week. You know, we had the permutations. We had what was happening, who needed to do what. And Newcastle said, I'm going to stop you right there. Are you ready for this? Watch this drive. And then decided to spank Adelaide 8-0. What the hell happened there? Like, where has this Newcastle been all along? And obviously the flip side, Adelaide. Have we just not spoken about how poor Adelaide has been this season because they've kind of been out of sight, out of mind almost, or because Canberra has been bottom of the table for so long because of the tiebreaker rule change? But yeah, this game, bananas. Let's talk about Newcastle first. Simply sensational. What impressed us the most about this Newcastle team?
Oh my God, wasn't this such a great game? Like, it was a great game in the sense that, like, every goal was exciting to watch. Like, some of them happened because of excellent play. Some of them happened just because there was like an inch of an Adelaide player who just didn't happen to get there. A lot of them happened from shots just outside the box as well. So that we had a bunch of long range bangers, including from Melina Ayres, like, who I reckon is going to be like, I know she's not a bolter anymore, but I think she's going to be one of the most important players over the course of final series now that she's back, now that this is like, what, 3 goals in 2 games, 4 goals in 2 games, can't quite remember. Yeah, she's like, and the fact that she's a bench player as well, coming on to replace Serena Bolden. Like, if you're any kind of club in finals and you were to pick 2 centre forwards who are in form, like, those two would absolutely be up in the conversation. Yeah, this game was epic. The first half, I think, was really, as I mentioned at the beginning, it was much tighter than this scoreline says. Adelaide had a number of very good chances, some one-on-one chances even, and it was largely entirely down to Newcastle's goalkeeper that they didn't score. You know, I think Isabel Hodgson had a go, Chelsea Dorber had a go. There are a couple of like really serious chances there, but it was Robertson who was able to pull out some amazing saves and keep Newcastle in it. And then over the course of maybe like 10 minutes in the second half, Newcastle were just like bang, 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 bang. Like, it was crazy. I don't know what happened with Adelaide. They kind of just fell apart. But also, to Newcastle's credit, like, this was really good football. They have some really, really good players. And I think their midfield in particular is really solid. I'm really impressed with Emma Dundas. Every time I watch her play, I think that she pulls out something that I'm like, oh, wow, where have you been this for a while? Lara Gooch was also excellent. Like, she's come back from the under-20s Asian Cup with in really high confidence, and she's been really great. And Lauren Allen as well has really come into her own towards the back end of the season too. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was just amazing. And I love watching Newcastle now. I feel the same way watching Newcastle now as I did watching Western Sydney at the start of the season. Like, I want to watch every game that they play.
Or Wellington, you know what I mean? Last year. Or Wellington, like a couple of years ago, right? We'd be like, oh, they're fun.
Yeah, exactly. They're fun, right? And now that they've managed to like, this game, they had to win this game by a number of goals in order to make finals and to leapfrog Western Sydney even. And so, like, this wasn't just a flouncing that, you know, didn't mean anything. They actually needed to score a number of goals and keep their goal difference in the positives in order to leapfrog Western Sydney and make it into finals. So good on them. Like, yeah, it's Adelaide and Adelaide are sort of weaker than a wet leaf, but Newcastle knew that and they came out and they absolutely flogged them. And now they're going to be in finals. And my genuine feeling is that Newcastle are actually going to go pretty far, if not all the way to the final.
Sounds big, cool. It's here. I don't mind it. I don't mind it. They're in form. They're red hot. They're scoring goals. They've got grit about them. That win over Melbourne victory was so gutsy, like so hard for them. They're actually the better team earlier. They should have scored early in that game. They hit the bar a couple of times. They're doing it when it matters. And they deserve a lot of credit considering the changes that they've had. They obviously, we know the instability around the club and the ownership situation. There's been a lot of, from a Dub perspective, there's been a lot of talk about Canberra, understandably, but maybe Newcastle seems to get framed a lot in terms of the men's team because they have both teams. but they have to deal with the same thing, the instability, the good players getting hoovered up by Sydney FC, understandably. Like, it happens. It's the reality. And Western Sydney as well pinched some of them. But the way they've responded, and I think what I really liked about this game was Serena Bolden had 3 assists. She didn't score any goals. Like, I think for a while there, it looked like it was really Serena Bolden, like, goal scoring that was dragging them along and keeping their season alive. We scored 8 without her scoring. And the fact that, as you say, they've got a player like Melina Ayres, who I still think it was interesting, former Socceroo Clint Bolton actually said on, and I think he knows Melina from early on and when she went to Melbourne City, like, it's amazing that she's not been in the frame for Matildas. And it just feels like to me she's had such badly timed injuries, like when she did that bad hamstring, which brought her out of a January window. Like, there's been camps. And because for me, she is one of the most natural strikers in the league and one of the most talented. She's got the tricks. Yeah, she's not quick, but it doesn't matter because she can score from range. She can score from close. Early on, it was only scores bangers, right? But now she's got such a well-rounded game and you hope she can really finish strong at the end of the season. Finals do seem to suit her. She was so good in finals for Melbourne Victory, right? Such a good performer when it really matters. And that's something that will hold Newcastle in really good stead because they're going to have a lot of players who don't know what it's like to play finals, who haven't played at the pointy end of the season. They've only made it a couple of times now. So that experience is going to be really crucial. And as you say, Sam, they're fun. They're enjoyable to watch. They've got a lot of local talent that are doing the thing. They've got young Matildas. I think that was a focus of Gary Van Egmond, was getting some of that young talent in. Obviously, they've had the coaching change since. But yeah, it'll be really fun to watch them. I think they're every chance against Western United, who, mostly for reasons out of their control, are really in a difficult position. And a confirmed ruptured patella tendon, which sucks. That's a real long-term injury. Chloe Legazo, I struggle to see her play. If she plays against Newcastle, I'll be shocked. Like, I'm sure there'll be the toing and froing of will she, won't she, like last year's finals. And based on previous years, you'd be inclined to say she won't be playing. They've got every chance. They're very fun. But Adelaide, geez, they're not good, are they, right? Like, how disappointing has this season been? I know we talked about Perth and Wellington, Perth in particular last week, but, like, losing your last game of the season 8-0, like, there's got to be some serious questions over what's going on with that football program, right? Like, this is a team that a couple of years ago was right in the finals mix, and I think last year we thought they could maybe contend, and then that fell apart, and then this season they've got worse. And it's not through a lack of security. Like, Adrian Stenter got signed to, I think, a 2-year deal at the start of the season, and there's got to be some question marks, unfortunately, over that now because of that end to the season. But, yeah, really disappointing. It just feels like they never got going, and I think to end on such a, not even a sour note, just like a awful note. I don't know how you take, it's very hard. It'll be very hard for them to see the positives coming out of that, if you know what I mean. Like if you miss finals, but you do what can, obviously Canberra off-field stuff aside, or Wellington finished really strong, that last performance against Western Sydney when they realistically had nothing to gain. You can take that into the off-season, but what do you take out of an 8-0 loss other than just feeling really, really awful about yourselves?
It's interesting as well, like mentioned this a little bit last week, but it's really exciting for the Jets, I think, that they've made finals without either of the Van Egmonds. And they have had like a little bit of a chaotic season and behind the scenes. But Adelaide, in contrast, you do have a long-term coach there. They've got a core of players that have been there for a while. The club itself seemed to be one of the better organized A-League clubs that do a lot of things really well. So yeah, it's a bit puzzling that they have just, yeah, Adelaide have been, they've had a very strange season. Like I feel like when they started, they were truly quite bad, some of their earlier games, and then they kind of reshuffled things and got a bit more of a foot in, and you know, Isabel Hodgson was put up top and played, like seemed to be showing signs, and same with Chelsea Dorber and that kind of thing, and then yeah, it's fallen apart again. I don't know, it's because when we look at like a easy example to draw on, but when we look at a Canberra United, they've had a very dramatic season, whereas I feel like even an 8-0 loss doesn't feel really indicative of a dramatically bad team in Adelaide's case. I don't know if I'm making sense, but they've definitely the most confusing team for me, bar maybe Perth, in terms of how their season has gone. And yeah, I feel like I do feel for the team, because that's like 8-0 is just pretty embarrassing, and you don't even have an opportunity to kind of prove yourself after the last round of the season. I guess we might come back to these questions at a later date as to what they do moving forward. But yeah, good for Newcastle Jets. Like I said in a while ago, good bogan fun. They bring it. How good to go into finals with a team like this that have just had this performance.
Can I just say that's the pod episode title sorted for this week? Good bogan fun, baby.
I mean, I'm reusing my own joke, but it's true. It's like they give like the Holden Supercars vibes. I don't know. It's just like, it's just invigorating watching them.
This is your Bathurst. But the Wanderers play at Bathurst. Oh, dear.
Oh, my God. That's incredible.
Vroom, vroom with Angela.
She just loves them vrooms. Anywho, on that exceptionally fun note, yes, we will attempt to actually talk through other teams' seasons. We've got to keep this one moving. I think it would be remiss of us not to mention Melbourne City's premiership, the 2-1 win over Perth Glory. It feels really weird, and I think this speaks maybe to, Harrow, your point about like the up and down nature of this season. You were speaking in regards to victory, but I think it's the entire competition. Like,
yeah, for sure.
No team felt particularly dominant for the entire season. So even though, like, when we look back at this season, Melbourne City were top for a very significant number of weeks. Like, they had a really good team, and then it seemed like international duty really
injuries. Like, I reckon Dario Vidicic and his team deserve a lot of credit for figuring this one out. They were obviously red hot at the start, the Holly McNamara train, and then they had to deal with that, which sort of they kept playing quite well for a bit, but then obviously you lose a little bit of imagination with your attacking options. They lost Caitlin Torpy, who's been arguably their best player for the past two seasons, to a transfer. They really did get stuffed around with the internationals, because New Zealand played outside an international window, and you know, they probably didn't have to let those players go, but Stoddy's your club captain, and Hannah Wilkinson's your top goal scorer. they let them both go. And then it took a while to sort of figure things out. They copped some losses they shouldn't have. They copped the red hot Perth loss early in the season as well. And they actually did look like they were going to be the ones to bottle it because they had a fair lead on everyone at one point in the season. Then got reeled in by Western, reeled in by Sydney. But to their credit, they've worked it out. It's a young team. I love that they've managed to get a lot of games into Carly Rosbacken, into McKenna, like players that have had real bad injury runs. They reintroduced Leah Davidson, who I thought I've mentioned a few times, who I thought was close to their best player last year and who they really, really missed her grunt and drive. Briley Henry's been played out wide and managed to find a little bit of something. Wilkinson's found form. I just think they deserve a lot of credit for figuring it out at the right time because they so easily, as we talked about just a few weeks ago, could have let this all slip away from them. And to actually sort of rest their season back on track when they, I know, Sam, numbers-wise, Sydney are the youngest team. I think having a couple of teenagers really does help that. City have got a very young team as well. And bar probably Wilkinson and Stop maybe, and if Bubs is included in their squad average, that skewers it a fair bit as well. But they've got a lot of young players who are talented and have points to prove. And I thought their maturity, I should have actually used it for my You Love to See It, but like Stoddy's goal line clearance against Perth on the weekend was fantastic. Like they figured it out at the right time. And I think they actually go, Newcastle are maybe the most red hot team going into finals. But I feel like if you're Melbourne City, you can actually go into this final series knowing you've got the week off to get any sort of niggles right, especially after going to Perth in the last round, get things sort of back on track, see if you need to reintroduce anyone. And they just sort of figured it out. I really like that. I think it shows maturity. As I mentioned, Paula Cena's not necessarily had the best season, but, you know, starts on the weekend and scores the crucial goal. But the way they've sort of gradually introduced players like McMahon and Myers and that sort of thing has been quite nice. Yeah, I think they're hitting the finals probably feeling really good about themselves. Like that they've maybe not been red hot, but they've done what they need to and they've found enough form that they should go in feeling confident and that they can actually go on and do the double. Like it's not one of those seasons where like maybe Sydney FC last year where you go, yeah, they should steamroll it, they should do it. But I feel like they'll feel very well positioned to do so just because of the way they've manoeuvred their way through this season and got the wins when it really mattered at the end there. Like, yeah, I reckon that's super impressive. They had to deal with a goalkeeper change as well. And it's funny because Prue seems to be playing so much better since she left the dub than when she was playing when she was here. And Barbara's obviously slotted in there as well. But, yeah, I think it's been a really impressive turnaround the last sort of month.
Yeah, a couple of really key draws as well. Like looking over their last, I think, was it a 6-8 games? They've only lost once and they've had three draws, one against Sydney, one against Adelaide and one against Melbourne Victory. And really it's those draws, I think, that were able to get them to the point where they came into that final game against Perth knowing what to do and knowing that they could still control their own destiny. So yeah, I think they're like resting the slide. I think it was is the key phrase there, Harrow. Like they saw that things weren't working, but they were able to shuffle things in such a way that, yeah, they maybe weren't absolutely dominating in the same way that they were at the start of the season, but they were doing just enough in order to sort of hang on. And then there was a couple of really good performances there as well, especially against the Central Coast. So yeah, good on them. Good on Dario Vidicic. For being able to figure it out, especially as you mentioned, Harry, with the loss of some of those really, really key players at very annoying points of the season as well. It's a testament to, I suppose, the depth of the squad too, and the recruitment that they've made over the off season, that they were able to call upon some of these players and slot them into the point where they kind of feel like they fit the plan now. They're not just like an emergency, like break glass in case of emergency player and just chuck them in and hope. I'm very interested to see how they go in finals. I'm not, same as Sydney, I'm not super confident that they're just going to roll through it all and claim the championship. I don't think they're necessarily playing the best football. And I think a number of other teams have been able to figure out what their weak points are. So I would love to see them bundled out in the first round, and I'd love to see the final consist of two teams that haven't been there for a while. Like I would love to see it at, like I'm just putting this energy out into the universe, but I would love to see a Newcastle Jets against the Central Coast Mariners in the Dub Grand Final. I think that would be amazing. Don't think it's going to happen. I don't know why all of a sudden on my screen there was just a thumbs up bubble coming up from my head. I don't know what happened there. I don't know what that was. I was just talking. Okay, I don't know. Maybe that's just what StreamYard can do if you do a thumbs up and the bubble sort of happens. I don't know. Maybe StreamYard also agrees with my prediction about Newcastle v Central Coast Mariners. But wouldn't that be fun? Like, wouldn't it? You know, I think we talked about this sort of intermittently over the course of the season that there was a point at which it was very cool that it wasn't just the same old top four. Like there was one or two teams sort of in the mix who were a little bit outside the box. They were performing really well, had some really cool players, and were making things a little bit more interesting. So I really want that for the rest of this season. I don't want it to be Sydney against Melbourne City again, or Sydney against Melbourne Victory again, because not just because we're going to lose, but because we've seen it already, you know.
Oh, goodness.
Sam's seen this film before and she didn't like the ending.
Like the ending.
No, sorry. Can't do it again. No.
But on that lovely note, we have finals to look forward to. The first week of finals is April 13th and April 14th, the elimination finals. So loser goes home. We start with Western United taking on the Jets down in Tane, and then Victory hosting the Mariners. So we have two really good games there. But just to recap round 22's results, because I haven't done that yet, we had the Mariners and Western United playing out a 1-1 draw. Obviously, Newcastle had that big win, 8-0 over Adelaide. Wellington, 2-0 over the Wanderers. Canberra, 2-1 over Brisbane. 4-0 for Victory over Sydney, and City wrapping up the Premier's plate with their 2-1 win over Perth. We had a question last week that we didn't get to, but we had it again this week. So in light of the drama that occurred across this weekend, people have once again put forward, should simultaneous kickoffs be a thing in the final round of the Dub season? So I ask you all, do you want to see simultaneous kickoffs, or are you happy with the way things panned out this season?
I think it would be really fun. I can see like both things have pros and cons, right? Like in this last round of the regular season, the drama was created because there were some teams who found out the results before they played. So Melbourne City against Perth. Melbourne City knew that they had to beat Perth in order to win the Premier's plate. Had Sydney won against Melbourne Victory and claimed the Premiership, would City have gone as hard as they did to try and get that win? I don't know. Had Sydney already beaten Canberra on Wednesday in that catch-up game to win the Premier's plate with a game to spare, would Melbourne Victory have come into this final round of the season pushing as hard as they would have, you know, potentially given the permutations elsewhere on the table? I don't know. So I can see it on that perspective that, like, they're by staggering some of the games, it means that some of the teams have more clarity and more certainty over what they have to do in their game. But I love simultaneous kickoffs. I think the drama of that is really fun. And I think we did an episode where we talked about the drama around the qualification for the Nations League? Or was that, it was like something to do with the Nations League where England, like there was an England game and there was a Netherlands game, and it, like one of those two teams had to win in order to qualify for the Olympics, and they both happened simultaneously. And I think it was England lost their game or won their game by not as many goals as what they needed to. And so they were all crowded around on the field with a phone watching the other simultaneous game where I think the Netherlands scored like a 98th minute winner or draw or something like that to knock England out. Like that, give me that. I lap it up. I love stuff like that. So yeah, I don't know. It just depends on who you are, where you fall on this kind of thing. But also there was a very good point that was made by someone over in Perth who said that simultaneous kickoffs would be very difficult in terms of our time zones. And would it really be fair if, for example, Perth were hosting a final regular season game, and if it was a simultaneous kickoff, it would have to be earlier in the day.
With Wellington.
Wellington, you know, like how time would we align, things like that, which, you know, I don't know. If you're the APL and you want to be smart about it, you would schedule the draw where all the final regular season games are on the Eastern Seaboard so they can all largely kick off at the same time, even though fans in both of those extreme parts can like would have to watch it at weird times. But I don't know. Again, pros and cons.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sam. I like it. I think we're a bit fortunate with how it played out on the weekend. And sometimes simultaneous kickoffs can be awesome, but sometimes it's all sort of pre-done. I think answer to that is basically your floating fixture, right? Where if you know it's going to be tight at the end, you try and arrange that, like, you know, a couple of weeks out or a month out. Just have that flexibility built into the final round, maybe. And there was that extra complicating factor with things like the Canberra games that got rescheduled, the midweekers, the games that got shuffled around. I think in an ideal world, it would be great to have that. I'm glad that it was all on the same weekend, at least. We've had other situations where, you know, easily the Premier's plate could have easily been decided midweek had Sydney not bottled it. But, like, that so much of it came down to those couple of days was... Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Like, you had action every day, and I felt like every time you were writing, like, as a journo, every time you were writing it, there was, like, a new, like, permutation or ramification to it. It was quite cool as well. I'm easy either way. But I do love, like, if it can work, the simultaneous kickoffs can be great. So, yes and no.
I don't know. They make Women's State League 3 in Victoria have simultaneous kickoffs for the last round of the season, so... If I should suffer, so should the APL. I don't know. I do enjoy the kind of I don't think it necessarily has to be every game, but if you could do, remember when we had Dub Zone last season and it was like simultaneous kickoffs every round. I did not enjoy that, but I do think there is value in the last round of the season of having a couple of games aligned, because then you do get. I think it's just like you get that drama, like you were talking about, Sam, of like waiting and needing to know immediately after the whistle what the outcome of the other game was, to know if you're in, that kind of thing. We saw a situation a couple of seasons, I think 2 seasons ago with Perth, where they were like dependent on the result of another game that had just occurred for whether they got into finals. They didn't get into finals. That was, you know, the lows of sport. But it still makes for an interesting, I guess, experience and makes for good football as well. But like we saw with this this last final round, you get good football anyway, if the conditions are right. So yeah, I don't feel too strongly either way. Sorry to whoever asked this question. We haven't given you a very like clear hot take answer. But you know, we've got to rest sometimes. We can't always be, you know, giving you hot takes constantly. Otherwise they wouldn't be hot, you know?
The hot take cannon is recharging at the moment. I'm all for simultaneous.
Along with the Sydney confetti cannon, sorry.
Be confetti cannons at every game and they either go off or they get wheeled away in shame. You know what the funny thing is? They might have to take it down to Melbourne because now Sydney are top of the table.
I mean, they've already got the white confetti in there. Like, it's just cost-effective is what I'm hearing. But, yeah, no, I'm pro-simultaneous kickoffs. I was literally thinking that Dub Zone's first iteration would have suited a simultaneous kickoff last round of the season perfectly, like that panel-style interactive, you cut to whichever game kind of has the action, you cut away to goals when they're scored, you've got the live ladder, like, it would have been... excellent. And I was just then reminiscing on the old the Foxtel days of red button on the last day of the Premier League season, and you got to decide which game you got to watch.
Or Goal Rush style with the FFA Cup as well.
Yes.
And like the air horn just goes off.
Release the Kraken!
Scored.
Oh, I miss it.
No, I think actually we're all in. We're all in. Yeah. Let's make it happen next season. Simultaneous kickoffs. Why not? It's only if there's air horns.
Yeah, we're very simple.
And Harrow gets to operate.
Or the confetti goes off. Sydney FC score.
I love it. I love it. Let's make it happen.
If you then lose, your players have to go and pick up all the confetti and put it away for wasting our time.
Yeah. That's right. I can't believe we fixed the A-Leagues today. This is incredible.
And also the broadcast thing is we just do it on the pod.
Who says no? Who says no? That's what I'm saying. Anywho, let us move along. Obviously, we are heading into an international window, so we have a very brief little thing about the Matilda squad. We had 3 changes during the week. Unfortunately, Katrina Gorry, Claire Hunt, and Courtney Nevin are all out due to various ailments. We hate all of them. But in their place, we have Em Gilnick, Winnie
Deaton. The ailments, not the players. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, we love all those. People know that we do not hate Katrina Gorry, Claire Hunt, and Courtney Nevin. Like, there's no hate there.
Sounds a lot like something someone who hates those three players would say, Marissa.
Suspicious.
Please stop starting shit while I'm trying to host a podcast, you guys. Far out. Anywho.
I thought that was the point of this pod. Oh, no. I'm being handed a note.
In their place, though, we've got Em Gilnick, which I think we're all really stoked about because we were very surprised that she wasn't included in the initial selection of this squad. Winnie Heatley returns, which I reckon she's unfortunately suffered a bit of the out of sight, out of minds over in Denmark.
I love that one. I love Winnie Heatley coming in. I think 2022, her last call up, and has just gone from strength to strength over in Denmark, right? So I think it's cool. I really liked her when she was in the dub. I know when Rado Vidasic coached City, he rated her super highly. I like it when players sort of have, if they maybe, though it may be tough at the time, they go away and they work on their game. And she's plugged away at a league in Europe and come back into the frame, and she should feel really ready to go and contend.
Absolutely, she should. And Sian Fryer, did anyone kind of expect her to be the one to get a call up from the dump?
No, real Bolter energy, hey.
But I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. And a little bit of Sneaky Sam sources. Someone at Football Australia told me that the reason why she was called up is because in terms of the data that she had been clocking over the course of her season with Brisbane Roar, she was actually putting in more, I don't know how exactly they quantify or calculate this, but she was putting in more effort and doing more high-speed runs. She was contributing more, creating more chances than Tamika Yallop for Brisbane Roar. Like, she was the highest ranked player in a number of categories. So, yeah, this is just reward for her performances. Good on her.
She's a machine athletically, which I love. I like that she's really clinical in front of goal. I think she's a super fun player. And I know, like you say, Sam, that's one of the things that's been emphasised, is being able to do those high-speed miles and being able to do them to the Matildas level, which is often something people don't realise when players go into that environment. They have to be able to keep up, literally, physically, be able to keep up, which is what, you know, like a Courtney Vine and maybe a Holly McNamara have been able to do. But a lot of players, the first time they go into a national team camp, and this isn't just an Australian thing, it's a big step up, especially, you know, partly the game style, but partly also the running, which is why a Caitlin Torpy is slotted in so well at, you know, the age of 22, 23, where she's got a bit more of a mature body. She's been in a really good system in Melbourne City and worked really hard, and, you know, she slotted in beautifully. And hopefully Sian Fryer, who's a little bit older as well, she's not just 18, I think she's what, 21, 22, is coming in, and she gets a great opportunity. And she has got pace to burn as well. I really like that move. The other thing I do like is the opportunity. I feel like I talk about every time we talk about Matilda's squads is surely this Mexico game we see the Claire Wheeler Karakuni cross midfield combination that I have been desperate to see for ages. Another one who probably could have been in the mix, given we've lost a midfielder, is Chid. So I think that's, I don't know if she's opting out at the moment, but I still think she should be in that sort of best 25, 26 players. I'd like to see her tested out in midfield. I think that's maybe a missed opportunity, given that's her best position. But the players that have been caught up all deserve it. But yeah, I hope we see Claire Wheeler get a genuine run alongside Karakuni Cross, because Katrina Gorry is going to be out for a while, and you need to see what the next option is. And Marissa, you shared the stat from Everton about just how influential Wheeler has been as their midfield workhorse, and I think it's about time that we see these two play together and see how they can combine, because we know that both of them can play deeper. They can both play more attacking. Kuni Cross is more explosive, and Wheeler is more just K's and K's and K's and K's and ticking over and never stopping and working and tackling and doing all the hard stuff. Like, I just want to see them play together. That's my simple request, which means Tamika Yallop will play in midfield.
You know what actually is going to happen? the thing we all don't want to happen that we have routinely dispelled as an option in midfield. That's what's going
to
happen.
I want to believe.
I don't want to believe anymore.
I thought you were going to say Alana Kennedy.
Why are there so many bad options?
Of all the times. I was like, of all the times. Like, we just lost Clown to injury. We can't be putting Alana in midfield. No, I think it has to be tested out.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you're right, unfortunately, Marissa. So I'm just not going to talk anymore until you know it. Give me 3 seconds.
Never make me right. Tony, if you're listening, never make me right. That's wrong. Don't do that. Jesus.
I failed everywhere, she says.
As I said, I don't want her feeling like that, but I resonated. I felt that.
But I think that call has to be made. I think we have to see it. Like, I think we need
Otherwise,
to see those two players play together. What's the point? Why do you keep calling Claire Wheeler in if you're not going to play her? She's
Quite
clearly
literal.
Doing the numbers at club level. I think we need to see this. You know, it's just overdue. Like, there's got to be some midfield options that aren't over 30 that can slot in and make an impact. Amy Sayre is obviously another midfielder who gets used more as a striker. But I think she'll get used more in that front four. But I think we're due seeing this. Like, at some point you've got to throw the players to the wolves a bit, right? Yeah, so I hope we see that. I hope we see Winnie Heatley at some point too, if she impresses in camp. Because I reckon, she's got a big future ahead of her as well as far as defenders go. Can play central, can play fullback. Off the top of my head, might be a lefty as well. So, good player.
It's going to be really interesting as well because, Heyman and Torpy retain their spots. Are we going to see them again? I sincerely hope we do because we've only obviously got the one game this window as well. So it is there's only 90 minutes available to kind of test all of these things out. So we obviously can't wait to watch that game. We'll talk about it in the aftermath as well. Boot this week, obviously, is the three players that we're injured. We absolutely hate all injuries. We talk about this every week. Injuries bad. So we obviously wish all of the players smooth and speedy recoveries, and we hope that they're fit and raring to go in time for the Olympics, God willing. But let's finish this off with some how goods. Who would like to kickstart us off with a how good? Samantha.
Samam. I would like to do a couple of very...
Ma'am. That's my how good.
I would like to do a couple of very gay how goods. Three, to be precise, because there were a number of gay things that happened over the last week that I think need to be given a bit of a shout out. The first is Jenna McCormick got engaged to her partner and also celebrated by scoring a goal and kissing a ring finger. Oh, stop it. I love that. It's so gay. I love to see Grace Wilson get their debut for Adelaide United in, unfortunately, that big loss to Newcastle Jets, but it was their first appearance for Adelaide. And they were pretty good. You know, they conceded a goal or two, but that's fine. It was their first appearance for the club, which is great. And the last was finally seeing the Wellington Phoenix's pride kit, which was, okay, I understand they're in a different time zone, but a different month from Pride? Like, come on, folks. Like, you got to at least get this shit ready for the actual Pride month when it coincides with Pride round, at the very least. Come on. But the Pride kits were great. I really, really liked the white one with the beautiful rainbow sort of detailing around. I think it was fab. So, yeah, shout out to all the gay stuff that happened in the dub. How good.
How gay.
How gay? How good?
Aaron, how good?
My how good is you don't want to see a player retire. It's a shame, and maybe she's doing it before. Some would probably say prematurely, but Larissa Crummer is retiring after she made that incredible comeback from a horror broken leg to get back playing for the Matildas. Was probably among those last few players who just missed out on the World Cup. Been playing really well for Brann in Norway. It's been really, really impressive. And after they got knocked out of the Champions League by Barcelona, she announced that she was going to retire to focus on her family, her partner, and that sort of thing. And she's going to go and become a plumber. So good on you, Larissa Crummer. It's good to know that, you know, it's important for players to know what they want to do after football. And I always respect when players decide that enough is enough and they want to move into the next phase of their life. I imagine this is something she's had a lot of time to think about with the ups and downs of her football career. And I imagine knowing when to do that would have been a difficult decision as well, and one that she's probably thought about a lot. So, yeah, to Larissa Crummer making that step into the next part of her life after such a gutsy comeback to football, I think it really shouldn't be underestimated, the work that she put in to get back. Yeah, but to the next stage of her life, how good. Congratulations on a very impressive career as well.
Also, Crummer the Plumber. Like,
Crummer the Plumber.
There's your tagline. There's your business name.
It's kind of, welcome, it's a Larissa. Shame she's not still playing, because she could sort of run with it as well. You could make all sorts of puns.
Yeah.
Also, I'm sorry, Crummer the Plumber needs to be the episode title this week.
No, good Bogan fun is still...
I need to
double captured my heart.
Use that. Because Angela has said it before, we might have used it, but no, it is an absolutely massive congratulations to Larissa Crummer on a wonderful career and all the best in the next phase of her life. Angela, do you have a how good? No, she doesn't. And that's okay, because sometimes we don't have how goods. That is us done for this week. As I said, mega episode. It was to be expected. Our next meeting will be post-Tillys, most likely, which is very exciting. We are getting ever closer to the Olympics, which is a terrifying thing to think about, but it is what it is. We will obviously all be watching the Matildas take on Mexico Wednesday, the 10th of April at 10 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Standard. You'll see it when you see it. Basically, Google it. I'm not here to teach you all about daylight savings time. Anywho, we're very excited about that. It's going to be good. We've got finals coming up, and they are going to be as chaotic as ever, because that's the only way the dub knows how to function. But thank you so much for tuning in today. As always, we're over on espn.com.au and the ESPN app. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, all of the usual pod spots. Beg your pardon. If you want to have a chat to us, we're at The Far Post Pod on all social media. We really appreciate your questions this week, and we'll hopefully get to some more throughout the final series. But until next time, see you.